Blog Talk Radio.
It's 3 p.m., and I have a question for you. Do you know where your politicians are? Everything is political in your life, from the moment you're born to the moment you die. And when a politician tells you that's not true, look in your pocket. You'll find their hand in it. Everything is political. We will be talking to those politicians that are working for you and talking about those politicians that are working against you. Just because they're a Democrat, or just because they're a Republican, and you voted that way your entire life, maybe you were wrong. Because everybody is not what they seem to be. However, there are a few out there who are working for your benefit, and we are going to bring them to you. We're going to let you hear them. We're going to ask them questions. We're going to let you ask them questions. And we're going to be discussing education system, the military, science, music, sports, oh, and health care. Do you have it? Do you need it? Are your 26-year-olds still on the family health care plan? Or, as the regressive party says, Obamacare. We will bring you what you need to know, because this is the last word. And everything, from the cities, counties, state, nation, the entire world. So sit down and get a pencil, paper, and take this graduate education experience. And we will make sure that you have the last word. My name is Michael Lawson.
Okay, I am having a major problem with Norton. So I had just turned him off because I was trying to get on my studio, trying to get into my studio for the last, I don't know how long, last half hour. And I couldn't get in. All of a sudden, I had to turn off the information, turn off, said, do not turn off your computer. Well, I turned off the computer. So I am now waiting. I guess Norton's waiting. I don't know. I'm trying to pull up what I plan to play for you guys, which was, this was going to be a big day here. I mean, every single time there's some freaking problem with either Norton or Sirius or one of these convoluted things here. But I just want to play something for you, if I can find it, until I get something on the, if I get my information plugged in here. So this is a, did anybody ever watch Gunsmoke? Well, Gunsmoke, and this is a little off the track what we're doing. Gunsmoke, which is one of my favorite all-time westerns, was on the air. I believe it started in 1955, September or something like that. And it was on for 20 years. And Gunsmoke was fabulous. Well, you know, the original star, instead of Matt Dillon, the one who was going to play Matt Dillon, was supposed to be John Wayne. But John Wayne had played with this young man, big man, big young man, and bigger than John Wayne, taller anyway. He loved him. He said, no, I would recommend this to my friend. And they said, okay, let's see how he does it. And he did it, and this is how Matt Dillon came to be. This is a little bit of this.
Good evening. My name's Wayne. Some of you may have seen me before. I hope so. I've been kicking around Hollywood a long time. I've made a lot of pictures out here, all kinds. And some of them have been westerns. And that's what I'm here to tell you about tonight, a western. A new television show called Gunsmoke. No, I'm not in it. I wish I were, though, because I think it's the best thing of its kind that's come along. And I hope you'll agree with me. It's honest, it's adult, it's realistic. When I first heard about the show Gunsmoke, I knew there was only one man to play in it, James Arness. He's a young fella and maybe new to some of you, but I've worked with him and I predict he'll be a big star. So you might as well get used to him like you've had to get used to me. And now I'm proud to present my friend Jim Arness in Gunsmoke.
Starring James Arness as Matt Dillon.
I try to remember that if they'd argued a little, they might not be here. Arguing doesn't fill any graves. Take me, I'm a U.S. Marshal. How many times I'd rather have argued than gone for guns? Take Dodge City over there. Gomorrah of the Plains, they call it. Jump-off spot. People coming and going all the time, good, bad, and worse. Temper's high. A man will draw his gun quicker to prove a point than he'll draw on his logic. That's where I come in, whether they like it or not. When they draw their gun, somebody's got to be around. Somebody on the law side. Now, Lord knows they hate that. He's a gunman, Doc. He has to be eliminated.
All right. All right, go on. Just go on down there and meet him. He blasted you last time, and you were lucky. You lived. This time he'll do it.
The clerk over at the Dodge house said Dan Gratt's still in his room. Mr. Dillon, can I just sort of follow?
See you
down to talk to you.
Just stay there. That's right. Now turn around and drop your gun belt, and then come down.
Now, Marshal, there's no reason why I can't come down there and talk things over with you.
I told you to stay right there.
I told you I like to be left alone.
I said stop and turn around and drop your gun belt. And then come down. I gotta hand it to you, Grat. You're the fastest I've ever seen. But you gotta be close. So close you can't miss. You don't take time to aim and shoot straight.
Well, you're wrong. You know it. All right, Mart. I give up.
I told you.
Now, Marshal, you wouldn't shoot a man with his hands up, would you? Just come down to surrender.
That's close enough.
Now, Marshal, I'm giving myself up.
You take one more step and I draw.
No matter. You're close enough now.
You don't know whether you are or not. I say you're not.
Well, I say I am.
Scene in Gunsmoke. And I was trying to play that. Well, I have something for you now which is going to lead into what we're talking about. I hope everybody has a chance to listen to Mea Culpa by Michael Cohen. Michael Cohen is now free to do and go wherever he wants to do because of the corruptness of Trump and his cohorts in the Department of Justice that were there before. We locked him back up. I just got to hear the Winston Committee has appeased 14 additional electors, the ones that said that they were electors. They want to know who the hell made them electors because the governor didn't sign anything for them. So we're going to get them. They're going to get subpoenaed because they refused to come. Anyway, getting back to the thing. So Mea Culpa is one of the finest shows. It is raw. It doesn't follow a script. He gets what he can out of the person. Michael Cohen does the interviews and stuff. He gets out of the person, the stuff that he wants you to know. And this week, was last week, he interviewed a gentleman who's a psychologist. But I you just need to hear this portion of it. and I'm going to play for you. This is Michael Cohen's introduction to his show. Come on. Oh, here comes.
Michael Cohen, and you're listening to the Mea Culpa podcast. I have said since the beginning of this show that Trump is a dangerous cult leader whose only goal was amassing of power and the acquiescence and total fealty of those who serve him. At first, it was the servitude of those who directly surrounded Trump. Soon, it became the entire Republican Party who would do just about fucking anything to stay in the dear leader's good graces. And Trump could do anything, probably even shoot someone in the face, and these fucking GOP sycophants would look the other way.
It is really troubling to see the Republican Party turn themselves into a cult and, you know, basically pledge allegiance not to the United States of America, but to Donald Trump.
Whether it was praising white supremacists, siding with Vladimir Putin, or suggesting bleach as a coronavirus cure, there was nothing Trump could do to make his Republican brethren walk away.
We have a Republican Party that is now an autocratic cult around Donald Trump. It is not interested in governing. It's not interested in even, you know, maintaining the solvency and the creditworthiness of the country.
Then came January 6th, and for a brief moment, it seemed that that was no longer true. Today, all I can say is, count me out, said Lindsey Graham, standing in a Senate chamber that just hours earlier had been overrun by a pro-Trump mob determined to overturn the 2020 presidential election. Enough is enough. A week later, he was joined by Kevin McCarthy, the Republican minority leader in the House of Representatives, who called on Trump to accept his share of responsibility for the deadly violence at the Capitol. Other allies turned against the president. If there was ever a moment that the party could snap out of its five-year fever dream, this was it. Yet it did not. In the years since the insurrection that reverberated around the world, Trump's stranglehold on Republicans had seemingly become stronger, not weaker. Graham was soon back on the golf course with him. McCarthy was soon kissing the ring at his Mar-a-Lago estate in Florida. Many leaders of the party have set about changing the narrative of the insurrection to portray it as a heroic last stand, a new lost cause.
There was such love at that rally, and they were peaceful people. These were great people. The crowd was unbelievable, and I mentioned the word love. The love in the air, I've never seen anything like it. You have people with no guns that walk down, and frankly, the doors were open, but there was also a love fest between the police, the Capitol Police, and the people that walked down to the Capitol. People who walked with no guns, with no nothing, and they're tremendous, in many cases, tremendous people.
But even on the night of January 6th, as members of the House and Senate stepped over blood and broken glass to get the job, some 147 Republicans still voted to overturn the election results. It was the first clue that Trump had burrowed too far down into the party's foundation to be expunged, and that anyone who tried would themselves be purged.
Myself and some 74 of my Republican colleagues and I objected to the electoral votes from the state of Georgia on the grounds that the election conducted on November 3rd was faulty and fraudulent.
I and 55 other members of the United States House of Representatives object to the electoral votes of the state of Nevada.
I object to the electoral votes of the state of Wisconsin.
I object to the electoral votes of my beloved Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
I, along with 70 of my Republican colleagues, object to the counting of the electoral votes for the state of Michigan.
I rise for myself and 60 of my colleagues to object to the counting of the electoral ballots from Arizona.
Is the objection in writing and signed by a senator?
Yes, it is.
The second clue came after Trump had been impeached for the second time by the House, a vote in which just 10 Republicans joined Democrats. a majority of senators voted to convict the former president, but fell 10 votes short of the two-thirds majority required by the Constitution. Trump was thus acquitted. Jamie Raskin, a Democratic congressman who was the lead impeachment manager, said, "The evidence was so overwhelming, our legal case was so airtight, and Trump's culpability was so plain to see, I thought that perhaps the Republican Party would use this as an opportunity to perform an exorcism on their own body. But Trump just controls way too much money and too much power in the Republican Party, and it was really only a matter of a week or two before he reasserted his authoritarian, cult-like control over the whole GOP apparatus."
This cannot be our future. This cannot be the future of America. We cannot have presidents inciting and mobilizing mob violence against our government and our institutions because they refuse to accept the will of the people under the Constitution of the United States. Much less can we create a new January exception in our precious, beloved Constitution that prior generations have died for and fought for, so the corrupt presidents have several weeks to get away with whatever it is they want to do. History does not support a January exception in any way, so why would we invent one for the future?
The third clue, demonstrating Raskin's point, came in May when Senate Republicans voted down an independent commission to investigate the riot based on the model of a commission that examined the September 11, 2001 terrorist attacks. Even the minority leader, Mitch McConnell, who had condemned Trump for inciting the violence and remains an arch foe, dismissed the proposed commission as a purely political exercise.
I think at the heart of this recommendation by the Democrats is that they would like to continue to debate things that occurred in the past. They'd like to continue to litigate the former president into the future. We think the American people going forward and in the fall of 22 ought to focus on what this administration is doing to the country and what the clear choice is that we have made to oppose most of these initiatives. So I think this is a purely political exercise that adds nothing.
Democrats instead created a House Select Committee to examine the events of that day and understand what role Trump played. It has interviewed hundreds of people and is threatening jail time for those who refuse to comply. But it is only two Republican members, that's Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger, and their fates say much about the direction of the party.
I mean, imagine, Jake, if President Eisenhower had summoned a mob to Washington and told them to march on the Supreme Court when they were hearing arguments in Brown v. Board of Education. And then imagine if he sat and watched them invade the Supreme Court and didn't do anything to stop it. We couldn't imagine that you know, an honorable man like Dwight Eisenhower would do something like that, yet that's almost exactly what Donald Trump did. And I think it's important for the American people to understand how serious that is and for us to get to the bottom of it.
Cheney, vice chair of the committee and daughter of the former Vice President Dick Cheney, had faced the wrath of the Republican Party of Wyoming, which voted to no longer recognize her as a Republican. She will be challenged for her seat in a primary election by a pro-Trump candidate. Kinzinger has been subject to death threats and will not seek re-election.
How does it feel to be a pariah within your own party? I said the same of Liz Cheney.
You know, I don't like the feeling. I've grown up, I was a Republican since I was 6 years old. I admire the Republican past, what we stood for, American leadership and strength, all that kind of stuff. So that part hurts, right? But I would never, I would not change a thing that I've done, particularly in the last year, because I know I've got a son being born imminently. It's why I'm in Illinois. I know that he'll be proud of me someday, and I know he'll be able to look and say that I stood up in a tough time. And if it's just me and Liz doing it, it's just me and Liz. That's fine. I wish there was more people, though.
Today, the loudest voices in the Republican Party belong to the extremists. for them. Trump's big lie that the election was stolen from him due to voter fraud, rendering Biden an illegitimate president, goes hand in hand with the lie that the insurrection was a morally justified crusade, a righteous endeavor to save democracy and not destroy it.
I think there's problems with this election. Why is it that it's always Democrat-run cities in swing states that have all kinds of problems allowing votes to be counted after the election? Just, you know, shazam, we found votes. They wanted to keep looking for and finding and counting ballots. We've had missing memory cards. We should continue to investigate this election. We got all these irregularities. With all the irregularities in all these key swing states, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, Georgia, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Arizona, five states, the state of Pennsylvania, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Look at Pennsylvania. There are 159 counties in Georgia.
Arizona.
Five key states that were critical in this election changed their election law in an unconstitutional fashion. There was unconstitutional change in the election rules, so they couldn't do it the constitutional fashion. Unilaterally changing the election law in an unconstitutional fashion. More than 50 million people think there are major problems with this election. 50-some million people think the election was rigged. So many Americans, 73 million, 74 million Americans instinctively know something's not right here. Something wasn't right with this election. That's why I'm standing up and objecting.
Trump himself perpetuates this through a regular barrage of interviews, rallies, and emailed statements since he was barred from Twitter. Notably, he has sought to lionize Ashley Babbitt, who was shot dead during the riot, as a martyr.
We must all demand justice for Ashley and her family. So on this solemn occasion, as we celebrate her life, we renew our call for a fair and nonpartisan investigation into the death of Ashley Babbitt. I offer my unwavering support to Ashley's family and call on the Department of Justice to reopen its investigation into her death on January 6th. Like all Americans, you deserve a fair process, you deserve answers, and you deserve justice.
Marjorie Taylor Greene, a Republican congresswoman, has cast rioters currently held in detention in a similar light. In November, she visited a Washington jail so-called Patriot Wing and complained that the inmates were enduring inhumane conditions because of their political beliefs.
We should all disagree with how these people are being treated. This is completely unacceptable, and as Americans, this should go beyond political boundaries, and we should all come together and declare that this is wrong and call for it to stop. We never want to have those in power to be able to wield their power against people they politically disagree with, especially in a time where we saw political riots all over the country, and the people that committed those riots, not only most of them have been let off of their charges, but many of them were never mistreated like this.
Other pro-Trump Republicans in the House echo these messages. One fucking referred to the Capitol attack as a normal tourist visit, or do little to contradict them. Some Republican senators are evidently more uncomfortable with the web of deceit and urge the party to look forward to the next election. But again, only a small minority are willing to take Trump on directly.
There was no insurrection, and to call it an insurrection, in my opinion, is a bold-faced lie. Watching the TV footage of those who entered the Capitol and walked through Statuary Hall showed people in an orderly fashion staying between the stanchions and ropes taking videos and pictures. You know, if you didn't know the TV footage was a video from January the 6th, you would actually think it was a normal tourist visit.
All are aware of the power of right-wing media over state Republican parties and the Make America Great Again base. Fox News host Tucker Carlson produced a three-part documentary entitled Patriot Purge for the Fox Nation streaming platform that pushed the bogus claim that the insurrection was a false flag operation designed to hurt Trump supporters.
So FBI operatives were organizing the attack on the Capitol on January 6th, according to government documents. And those two are not alone. In all, Revolver News reported there are, quote, upwards of 20 unindicted co-conspirators in the Oath Keeper indictments, all playing various roles in the conspiracy, who have not been charged for virtually the exact same activities, and in some cases, much, much more severe activities, as those named alongside them in the indictments. Huh? So it turns out that this white supremacist insurrection was, again, by the government's own admission in these documents, organized at least in part by government agents. Are you shocked? We're shocked. We shouldn't be shocked. Because in March, the FBI director admitted that the Bureau was infiltrating as many dissident groups that opposed the regime.
Steve Bannon, a former advisor to Trump, used his War Room podcast to promote the big lie that Trump won re-election in a landslide, and features guests such as Mike Lindell, the fucking pillow businessman who peddles wild conspiracy theory bullshit. Bannon encourages listeners to support the legal defense of the January 6th political prisoners.
We already have all the pieces of the puzzle. And you talk about evidence. We had enough evidence to put everybody in prison for life, 300 and some million people. We had that all the way back to November, December. But what we have are these other things that had to happen, which was all evil revealing itself. I mean, evil's popping up like pocket gophers. I mean, they pop their heads up, it's whack-a-mole, right? I mean, it's everywhere. And that all had to be revealed.
This has helped fuel a climate in which fealty to Trump and his debunked narrative is a litmus test for Republican candidates for Congress. Almost a third of Republicans believe that violence may be necessary to save the United States, according to a recent poll by the Public Religion Research Institute.
And he has made this a litmus test issue for Republicans, and that's just the reality that they face. In a lot of these campaigns, congressional campaigns, House campaigns, Senate campaigns, you are going to have Republican challengers saying that the 2020 election was a fraud, that election integrity, in other words, you know, cracking down on people's ability to vote in under the guise of, you know, having a more accurate count than we had in 2020, which, as you said, again, was the accurate count, is the biggest issue, and it's something we all have to push for. And then so that is going to be an agenda-setting thing in these campaigns. And the Republican leaders know that as well. So, yes, while they may not want to talk about it and it may, you know, cause them to tear their hair out when they see a tweet like that, the reality for them is this is a core part of the Republican message.
Yeah. Trump's resilient ability to bend the party to his will and to his disinformation about election integrity have fueled a drive to make it harder to vote, likely to have a disproportionate impact on Democrats. Between January and October, 19 states have enacted 33 laws to restrict voting access, according to the Brennan Center for Justice.
Doesn't matter what party you're in. It doesn't matter your party affiliation. What matters is our collective effort to agree and then to achieve the goal of ensuring that we promote integrity in the election process and that achieves our goal of instilling trust and confidence in elections.
In addition, Trump loyalists are running as candidates for secretaries of state and other positions that would give them power over the running of future elections. With Republicans in a strong position to regain control of the House and Senate this year, the party is readying for a repeat of January 6th with a different outcome. 1 year on, many analysts argue that America is now split between the Democratic Party and an anti-Democratic Party, the latter being barely recognizable as the one-time home of Abraham Lincoln and Ronald Reagan. Instead, Trump remains its most powerful and popular figure and could run for the White House again in 2024, though I often state I don't think so. And now for the main event. Let's face it. The GOP has become a full-on fucking cult. Its leaders are enthralled to Donald Trump, a defeated former president who refuses to acknowledge defeat. Its ideology is MAGA and is taken as gospel as if Trump himself were the Lord and Savior. In this era of autocracy, Trump came seemingly out of nowhere to brainwash half this nation into believing his bile-less lies. But my next guest on Mea Culpa, Dr. Stephen Hassan, has Trump's number, pegging the orange freak as a malignant narcissist. He's spent the past 45 years rescuing people from the clutches of some of this nation's most notorious cults, and has of late found himself rescuing those afflicted with Trumpism and its various offshoots from QAnon to the more obscure authoritarian cult.
We spend a great deal of time exploring the meaning of Trump derangement syndrome and how it manifests on this podcast. But I want to go even deeper now to try and explain the psychological comorbidities of an individual infected with TDS. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to malign the 63 million Americans who voted for Donald Trump in 2016. Not everyone who pulled that lever suffers from Trump derangement syndrome. Most are hardworking middle-class Americans, the so-called silent majority, who are just simply worried about day-to-day kitchen sink issues, like their 401k. They see themselves losing what precious little piece of American dream they had, and they're frightened. I'm not going to go into the whole political analysis on Trump's base. We know the playbook here. It's the same one Richard Nixon used in 1972. It's the same one Lee Atwater used in 1988. And it's the same one Trump is using in 2020. His added appeal, though, was his promise to drain the swamp. Voters were sick and disgusted with Washington. They were tired of the waste, the lobbyists, and even the politicians themselves. And here comes Donald Trump. He's a builder. He's a billionaire. He doesn't owe anybody anything. It would be a clean slate and things could finally get done. We know what really happened. The man is, after all, corrupted and compromised to the core. And the swamp, rather than being drained, was filled with all manner of bottom-dwelling reptiles. But I'll get to them in a second. My point here is that I don't blame these voters. Because taken at his word, I can understand the appeal. Unfortunately, it's all a big fucking gigantic lie. The man has done nothing but hurt the middle class. The vaunted Trump economy, the one shred of credibility he could possibly stand on, it's all gone. COVID took that away. And guess who put us where we are with that? But I get the surface attraction, and there is validity. So it's not really Trump derangement syndrome, but that's the only allowance I'm willing to make. The rest of the derangement lies in a combination of factors. First off, you've got your racists. There are millions of angry Archie Bunkers out there fueled with resentment by Fox and encouraged by Donald Trump.
Rural America spoke up when they elected Trump. Rural America.
And by rural America, he means white America.
We're staring down the barrel of a gun here in white America.
Here he's not pretending. He's one of them. It's probably the most pure and authentic of his beliefs, and the one thing not done for political expediency. The man is truly a racist to the core, and he's not afraid to let everybody know.
Look at my African-American over here.
For a certain subgroup, that's enough right there to engender everlasting loyalty. The kind where he could shoot a man in the face, maybe me, on Fifth Avenue, and still they would vote for him. Next to the evangelicals. I write a lot about this in Disloyal, and even describe a scene where pastors from across the country, they come to Trump's office and lay hands upon him.
Father, I pray for my president and our president. I pray for you to give him boldness. I pray, Father, for him to defy and challenge giants in the world and defy and challenge the enemies in this nation.
Trump feigned piety in their presence, only to voice his disgust and disapproval to me, later asking, how can anyone believe that bullshit? But the evangelicals know Trump is an imperfect messenger. He's just a means to an end, a mere vessel to carry out an agenda. They agree to stand silent and hold their nose, and Trump will stack the Supreme Court with conservative judges and enact a culturally conservative agenda. Again, he does not care or believe in any of this.
The Bible certainly is one of, if not, I mean, it is the book.
This is a man who enjoys cavorting with strippers and porn stars. He has no genuine sense of morality. It's simply ticking boxes and expedient for both sides. Now let's turn to the swamp. The cesspool of corruption created and enabled by Donald Trump is unprecedented in American history. He makes Richard Nixon look almost virtuous in comparison. You would have to look to the Warren Harding administration to even come close to a comparison. Even then, Trump still comes out ahead. After all, Harding was never impeached. This goes back to him being a truly corrupt and compromised individual. His entire way of going about business is an exercise in fraud and manipulation. For the sycophants, the thieves, operators, and opportunists, they see a fellow traveler in Donald J. Trump. They know with the right grease, financial or otherwise, they will be free to ply their trade and to do so in plain sight. The man is literally for sale. I know this because I brokered much of the political patronage he doled out after the election. And the sycophants, the Corey Lewandowskis of the world.
Remember, some of the experts told us that, you know, it could be 1 to 2 million people will have succumbed to this virus if we didn't do what the president did. So he's taken swift and decisive action on this.
Who saw in Trump an opportunity to ride his coattails into the corridors of power. They knew how to play to an audience of one. Praise him enough on Fox News, parrot his favorite talking points, and fluff his fragile ego, and you're going to be invited into the inner circle. After describing the above individuals, we turn to those truly afflicted with Trump derangement syndrome. I put myself in that category, past tense. The otherwise rational and intelligent professionals, who despite themselves are drawn into his cult of personality. Take Mooch, for instance. The man is a Harvard Law graduate. Flamboyant in his presentation, yes, but nonetheless a grounded and intelligent person. How does he, after spending one day with Donald Trump, start threatening reporters on the telephone like a movie mafiosa?
New communications director Anthony Scaramucci unleashing a profane attack, telling a reporter from The New Yorker, "What I want to do is I want to, expletive, kill all the leakers."
He did it because he was playing to an audience of one. Donald Trump is the sun, and we revolved around him looking for warmth and to curry his favor. For people like myself and the Mooch, we spent our entire lives as outsiders, or at least outside the true corridors of power. And then all of a sudden, we're inside the White House. It's intoxicating. And the only way to stay there and to stay within his good graces was to stay on script and stay on message. You deviate one iota, and you find yourself cast out of the circle. In Anthony's case, he came in with the best of intentions. He truly thought he could affect change. And so you hang on to that shred of hope and dignity, believing that you could, and believing that it will outweigh the bad. But every day you're getting further and further away from the North Star until you can no longer find or even recognize your moral compass. And then you're lost. He owns you. And you'll do anything to stay within that circle. Because once you're out for good, and there's no getting back in. Most likely, your career and your reputation are in ruins. So your only choice is to stay and to continue to propagate the lie until you believe it yourself. This is how a cult works. Or more apt, this is how a dictatorship works. To the audience of one. The constant scurrying to remain in the leader's favor, requiring his subjects in Stalinistic fashion to repeat his lies and propaganda over and over and over again. Until after a while, you start to believe your own bullshit. That is true sickness. So thanks for listening to Mea Culpa Podcast, and I'm Michael Cohen.
All right, that was just, I had some calls on the line that I didn't want to interrupt the what was going on, so that's why I didn't answer. So you can, if you're still listening, please call back. We can discuss this. Discussing menace. Now, you have someone like Michael Cohen, who's now, he's been there. He's done that. He's bowed and kissed the ring or the ass. He's done all of that. But why are you all doing that now? You know who you are. You know who you are. All you people that sit around kissing, but I know the man. I'm not speaking from GP. I've been to fundraisers with him. That's where we met. And, you know, he's the biggest bullshit artist to walk the face of the earth. He is a big bullshit artist. He always comes in late. And he's the first one to leave. Why? Because he wants everybody to notice him. I spoke to him, made 3 or 4 words. Hello, how are you? He said, hello, how are you? I'm fine, can't you see? This is, what, 1993, 30, 40 years 40 years ago. Two different fundraisers. Charlie Rangel. You got Charlie Rangel's fundraiser. Charlie Rangel! This man, and he gave some, it wasn't, I don't believe it was, I can't remember, if it was for Charlie Rangel, or Charlie Rangel was hosting it for some meals, but he gave a lot of moolah to the fundraiser. They left. And everybody laughed at him when he walked out. Because they know he's a bullshit artist. He don't believe in nothing. He had all those, as Michael said, he had all these misses come and pat him on the head and pat him on the back and say, oh, you're so great. And he says, yes, can't you see? You don't have to say that, but I want you to say it anyway. I am great. This is how this man is. And excuse me, back on January 10th, January the 5th, or January 6th, I'm sorry, 6th, the attack on the Capitol, this man had a PowerPoint presentation that was given where he was going to declare a national security emergency in order to delay the certification of the 2020 election. Now, this was an email that Mark Meadows provided to the committee. Mark Meadows provided this PowerPoint presentation that was created by Donald Trump. Well, not really by Donald Trump, because he can't use the computer. He can't use the phone. He just calls numbers and answers. He can't use the computer. Maybe he can use the computer, but he, you know, text. Excuse me, that's what I'm saying. I know. Anyway, he passed this PowerPoint presentation around, and this is what Mark Meadows provided to the Sixth Committee. Now, don't you think they want to, it was like 39, 40 pages, don't you want to see the man that had it and passed it around as the second most powerful man in the country, more powerful than the vice president, is the chief of staff of the president. Because he provides all the people for the presidency. He provides all the paperwork for the presidency. He collects all the paperwork that the president signs. He does it all. He knows what's going to the president and what's not going to the president. Now, in this case, nothing goes to Trump that he doesn't know is coming. If he doesn't know it's coming, he's not even looking at it. He wants to have some points. Hey, Trump, what's this about? Because he can't read that well. This man, and I think if we can get a doctor, we will find out that he can't read that well. And that he has some sort of problem thinking clearly. I believe the man was Hugo Lowell of The Guardian. He tweeted slides from the presentation last Thursday, the 30th of August, are a conspiracy theory-laden plan for Vice President Pence to install Republican electors in states where the fraud occurred. Now, they are called, the 1-6 committee is calling these electors in. They refuse, so they're getting subpoenaed. These people were supposed to go right at their own, as they signed up the electors that were signed to the state, they created their own electors. And one didn't go because they couldn't get in, they did go, but they couldn't get in to present their slate of electors because the state police stopped them at the door. You know, where are the electors? There's no electors already in there. So, well, here's our presentation. Well, you can't come in. So you know what they did? They created their own logo of the state and sent it in anyway. They created their own logo.
Didn't have my mic die here, I was so screaming. They didn't have their own logo. So they created a logo of the state, copied it, and sent it in. So you don't think they're going to get arrested? Because each one of them signed it. But they thought that they wouldn't, because the president, the almighty stinkeroo, the orange man in the White House, he would all have forgiven them and given them a way out instead of being arrested. Because he had all those people already in place, in government, already in place, in government, that would Trump had DOJ sewn up. He knew it was there. He had supposedly had the Supreme Court sewn up. So therefore, would he need anything? I'm the person that's going to be running this whole state. This is my office. The White House was his office. It was nothing but Trump's office. And whatever he wanted, he would get. So the people, he doesn't control the DOJ. He doesn't control that. But the problem is he controlled it when he was president. He controlled it when he was president. And it's like, so he wanted to set up, and I hate to say due to comparison, but the comparison is so valid. He was running the United States like a Nazi regime. Just like a Nazi regime. He had everybody in place. Everybody. Until he started doing a little bit of stuff that even they would not do. And that is where he got in trouble. That's where he got in trouble, because it just went too far. He just went too far. When you go into the questions of why, why the Attorney General and the Assistant Attorney General and everybody in line there, why would you just, here's the thing, that most of these people got to their positions because of this outrageous presence in the White House. That's the reason why they got there. There wouldn't be another position. There wouldn't be anybody that would take over that position. He had Jeff Sessions, but he really couldn't stand Jeff Sessions, because Jeff Sessions was a punk. Yeah, easy. He was so easy to get out. It is so conspicuous how he how he got him out, how he just forced Sessions out. He forced him out. Forced him out, and then they still wanted to serve. They still wanted to serve. They still wanted to serve, even though they knew it was a death trap. You know, they tell you when you're doing something to stop digging. But why don't you stop digging? Why do you continue to dig? Because they know that as soon as they came out of the hole, they would get their head shot or cut off. So the only way to go is to go down deeper and deeper. But you know what? William Barr, Mr. Barr, who took the shot from Sessions and became Attorney General, he said, I know how to run this. I know how to run this. But when this clown Trump took over the country on every level, he had the senators, he had the House of Representatives, he had the Supreme Court, all the laws were at his fingertips. But you know what he didn't have at his fingertips? Was you and I, the American people. Yeah, they slipped up and followed the glowing light because, ooh, it's a lot of light. He gives us a lot of light. And then they found out, you know, it reminds me of an old story. And some of you might think this is kind of crude, but this is how the story goes. These guys all were in hell. Bunch of people. Thousands. And this guy was so bad when he went down there. He says, "Is this?" But see, they were standing in shit up to their waist. And he said, "If this is as bad as it gets, if this is my life, I will love it. I can drink water. I get food brought to me. I will love it." And he ate his food. As he was eating his food, he said, "Oh, this is good. Just third plate down. You don't have to do nothing with it. I mean, hell, this is shit I'm standing in." So he said he was there. He was standing there talking to somebody else. That's all he was doing. He was standing there talking to somebody else. And all of a sudden a whistle blew. And he told the next guy, "Hey, what's that?" He said, "Oh, you'll see." Guy came out with a whip, big devil, long ears, long tail. He said, "All right, everybody. Everybody back on their heads." He says, "What?" "Yes, that's where you stay 23 hours a day. And it flows all through you." So, Mr. William Barr said that, "Holy cow, Batman, this is outrageous. This is outrageous." He said, "Yeah, get back on there." Wham! The whip came across his head. And he said, "That's where you at." So he did all these dastardly deeds and everything. He thought he got away with it. Thought he got away with it. But he didn't. He didn't get away with it. He did not get away with it. And that's the problem. He didn't get away with it. So if that's where you're going to go, gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, I'm trying to get this thing, even the breaking news is here. Anyway, so yeah, so that was the, that's the, it went to hell. Everybody's standing, and then the whistle blew, and everybody had to go on their heads. This is what William Barr said, you know, and I can't do this. So William Barr says, I'm out of here. He said, and there is no cheating in the election. There's none. There's no cheating. Just like the Tom Hanks said in a baseball movie, there's no crying in baseball. No crying. Are you crying? No. There's no crying in baseball. So the thing is that we have a situation now where William Barr was his main man. And William Barr said, I'm not going to stay around for this garbage. This man is absolutely out of his mind. So therefore, I am not staying there. And that's what happened. He did not stay there. And he got out. So now, he has to install somebody. So he tried to get this other guy, Rosen, to step in. And he got Rosen to step in. But Rosen wouldn't go along with him anyway. Rosen, I'm not doing this. What you're doing is crazy. Outrageous. I'm not doing it. So they try to sneak this other guy in. And Rosen said, I'm not giving up the job. You don't know how you're going to sneak him in. And this guy was some sort of bookkeeper practically. He didn't know nothing. He knew how to spell FBI. But that's all he knew how to do. And he got to the point where he says, you know, I don't know what to do about this. And the president said, this is what you're going to do about it, former president. This is what you're going to do about it. You are going to go and you're going to write up a declaration that says all these things in it. And you are going to go along with it and you are going to make sure it passed. Well, he did not have the backing of anybody. So when push came to shove, forget it. Didn't happen. And that's where we found out every single thing that was going on. It's outrageous. This is how we found out everything that was going on. And this is where we are today. Now we know that these electors, all these electives, will create all these Trump said we're going to set our own electives to these five states. And we will make sure they get in. Well, how are you going to make sure if you don't have the Attorney General behind you? We'll do it because we'll create our own laws when I become president. Well, he didn't become president. He lost. As Michael Cohen said last night, he got 63 million votes. That's a hell of a lot of votes. Biden got 84 is more than a hell of a lot of votes. That's a lot of votes. So right now, where am I at here? Well, I don't know why I can't get this thing plugged in. I wanted to get this thing going here so we could read it. And let's see if that will make it work. See how that comes up. Now, this, I guess you just, no, I don't record it. Let me start redoing this again. Is it okay? I'm trying to do what's coming on the TV. I'm trying to get us to the position where we can, where I can read what's on the TV while I'm talking to my audience. And it doesn't seem like I can do that for some reason. I don't know why. I'm a little distanced from it. I'm trying to use the remote control. Nothing's coming up. Nothing. So anyway, if I turned it off, maybe I can do that and then it'll come back up. Anyway, so this is where we are with this. And he, part of this whole thing was him sending out these electives the electors in these five states, Arizona and Michigan and Pennsylvania and Georgia and I forgot the other places. But that's where he sent out these electors. And but the electors had already been chosen because they're chosen at the convention and with the governor. And the governor had to sign off on it. None of these people had the governor sign up. They said, oh, yeah, we got a senator to sign it. Yeah, but that's not good enough. The governor has to sign it. The governor of the state has to sign it. And you got to remember, since the election, 13 months or so ago, no evidence has emerged that foreign entities influenced the election. Because that's what he was saying also. They got foreign entities. The guy's been dead down there in Venezuela for 10 years. He was doing it. There's no significant fraud, and that's what Barr said when he went out the door. That's why this PowerPoint letter went out. Let's see if I can pull this PowerPoint letter out. No, I won't be able to. Anyway, that's why this PowerPoint letter went out, which provided Texas in which he discussed a highly controversial plan to overturn the election results by appointing alternate electors in certain states. Meadows said, I love it. Meadows discussed the same plan and was distributed. He was in direct contact with these people. Contact. This is the second position in this country. Yeah, the vice president is 32nd position, but the person that operates it day to day is the attorney, is the chief of staff. And when the chief of staff says something, it's because the president knows he wants it done. That's why they're holding Meadows in contempt. Because he said, I would go to any place because I did nothing wrong. And then when it came to, he put this out, Trump must have went ballistic on him. And then he said, hey, I'm not coming. I said, fine. Subpoena the butt. This is the first time a subpoena has ever been tried on the chief of staff. Because they tried repeatedly with Meadows to come in. But he wouldn't cooperate. It was also possible that Meadows decided to buck the committee after reports began to circulate that Trump was pissed at him for revealing all the details about what went on, about the COVID, how that went on, all the stuff that he talked about. And he talked about the extent of Trump World's very efforts to overturn the election results. But we don't have to wait for the letter. These guys did it on their own. They were on, they just loved to talk, just like him. He never did anything in secret that he didn't know about. You knew about it because he had told you one time or the other. At the Capitol, we had five people that died because these people went into the Congress. Five people. The material that was turned over by Meadows is possibly the tip of the iceberg. Liz Cheney said that the committee is preparing to hold several weeks' worth of public hearings that will tell the story and not just what went on at the Capitol. This will be in living color. This will be in living color, she said. I will make sure that there's nearly 300 witnesses now. And when you do their depositions, it will be every week. We will be chock full of people for 15, 20 weeks. And you'll expect a ruling immediately whenever it can obtain Trump's House, White House documents, which they have now. It is firing on all cylinders now. Trump's executive privilege claim is kaput. And that's not all. his privilege down in Georgia, where he told the Attorney General down there that, hey, just give me 11,000 such, well, I forgot 11,000, how many more votes, find them. Hey, you can always tell them, hey, we did some more research and we found these. Hey, they do research, they found things. Yeah, but they found things that went to the other side. And because we're saying that he got 64 million votes, 63 million, how do we know that he didn't cheat on those votes? I respect those votes are really crooked, because I don't believe there's 63 million dumbass people in this country. I don't believe it. I don't believe it. I don't believe whether or not there's 63 million dumbass people in the United States. I don't believe it. I just don't believe it. I cannot believe it. I just can't believe it. So, whenever we see or hear that he has all these people, let's just think who's telling us this. I don't believe it. I just don't believe it. And you can believe all what you want. But I want to read this to you. This is what the committee is saying today. As soon as I get the app up on the TV, I'll read it to you. But we have to remember that there are so many, many, many people that are out there, just like Michael Cohen says. They're on the cusp of going ballistic. They're on the cusp. Some of these people don't have the brain they were born with. And they will follow anybody in a freaking hood and mask. Now they follow the orange man. It's just like following the devil. You see, look, he's orange. Why would you follow this man? This is what I don't understand. Why would you follow this man? Why would you follow this man? They do. They do. And this is the problem. Why do they follow this man? What's the problem? I just, you know, we have a problem. And this is our problem. We have a problem trying to understand what is right and what is wrong. And therefore, we have a major problem with what is going to be going on when things are given to us. Things are given over to us. It's just incredible. It's just incredible. It's just incredible. Now, Nicole Wallace is talking. Her show's been on now for about 20 minutes. In about 20 minutes, I'm trying to get the damn thing up. But I am almost there right now, and we'll hear what she is saying. Because this is portion of Zoom. Start over. That's what I do. That's what I want to do. Start over. Okay. They're calling up these electors, calling these electors up to speak is just outrageous. Because these people, come on, these people are, I think I got it here. Okay, here it is. Just listen here. This committee just sent 14 new subpoena probes to the people who presented false electoral information. Okay. Now, you probably can't hear that. But these people present themselves as the legitimate electives there in the state. And this is what the chairman of the 1-6 committee, along with the vice chair, Cheney, sent out. These are the fake Trump electives. We believe the individuals we have subpoenaed today have information about how the so-called alternate electors met and who was behind the scheme. We encourage them to cooperate with the Select Committee's investigation to get answers about the 1-6 for the American people, and helps ensure nothing like this ever happens again. So, that's what they said. Now, she's going to read it. Now. And they're saying that these electors play a central role in the so-called alternate electors from those states then transmitted the purported electoral college certificates to Congress, which multiple people advising former President Trump or his campaign used to justify delaying or blocking the certification of the election during the joint session of Congress on January 6, 2021. Now, this is the same thing that Michael Cohen was talking about when he said that these people got up and said, oh, yeah, I got it signed by my governor. I got it signed by my governor. He said, oh, okay. But you see, where's that? Oh, we got it in our hand here. We're going to give it to you. No, no, no. We should already have this. See, so when they presented these electoral certificates to Congress, that is a federal violation, not just a state violation. These people made state violations. So they're all getting subpoenas. They know they weren't going to come. So John Eastman, whose lawyer is... He said, seven states have transmitted dual states of electors to the president of the Senate. That's a coup. Are in deep, deep doo-doo. Pretty soon they'll be going back on their heads in the doo-doo. But there is a major problem, because we need to stop this from ever happening again, because it will. Because they now, you had a dummy leading them, a dummy who did not know half the people who were working for him, three-quarters of the people working for him. So he did not know, he didn't get the right people, and he wasn't smart enough. Hey, It took a long time to get the Al Capone. 7 years, I believe, he got after they got hold of him. Let's see. Now, what is the Attorney General of New York City talking about? She said that Trump, the New York Attorney General, alleged Trump altered values of 6 different properties. Can you believe that? One was the Doral, I know. So the Office of the New York Attorney General, Letitia James, this week filed its most detailed allegations in its investigation into whether Donald Trump's family business has inflated property values for financial gain. Investigators said in the court papers filed late Tuesday, they have uncovered significant evidence that suggests the company used fraudulent or misleading asset valuations to lenders, insurers, and the IRS to secure favorable loan, tax benefits, and insurance coverage. The filing said that the investigators have decided whether or not to bring a lawsuit over the evidence, but James asked the court to compel Donald Trump and Donald Trump Jr. and Ivanka Trump to testify. 6 of Trump's properties were named in the documents as fraudulent valuations. The Seven Spring Estates, Trump Tower Triplex, Park Avenue Building, 40 Wall Street Skyscraper, and golf courses in Westchester and Scotland. James' office alleged when Trump looked to refinance 40 Wall Street in 2015, his statement of financial condition estimated to be $735 million valuation of the property, but one lender valued it at $257 million. 214 Trump valued his golf course in Aberdeenshire and Scotland for $435 million. James claimed that the valuation was inflated by Trump's organization's assumption it could build 2,500 luxury homes there. Despite that, it was only approved for 1,500 homes, so apartments, I should say. Investigators also accused the Trump Organization of inflating the size of Trump's penthouse residence in Trump Tower by nearly triple, from 10,996 square feet to 30,000 square feet. The allegations led to $327 million valuation of property, which longtime Trump Organization CEO Alan Weisberg told investigators was a $200 million inflation, give or take. Spoken with the Trump Organization, hit back at the file in a statement dismissing the allegations as baseless and promising the accusations would be vigorously defended. You gotta say that. Can't say, yeah, you're right. The only one misleading the public is Letitia James, the spokesman said, in part for Trump. She defrauded New York by basing her entire candidacy on a promise to get Trump at all costs without having to see a shred of evidence, a violation of every conceivable ethical rule. Okay. The lawsuit filed in federal court last month on behalf of Trump and his family bases aimed to end the civil inquiry and her involvement in a similar criminal investigation. Trump's organization executive vice president, Eric Trump, responded by doubling down on the company's allegation, alleging that James is motivated by a political bias. In a tweet, Trump called the investigation window dressing for your abuse of office and ethical misconduct, which we are prosecuting for you. Additionally, the probe is a PR move to revive political career after your gubernatorial disaster. That's what he said. Well, we are up to date, I guess, on Mr. Dummy. I need to now tell you, this is something that I recorded, and it was sort of confusing, but because we went to my pastor, Father Basil, Sade, here in Charlotte, has written 2 books. about Africa and African-American utilization, how it's influenced Africa and how Africa has influenced us culturally. And we didn't get a chance to read the first book because I believe we had a blizzard here or no, my leg wasn't right. I couldn't go see him. And we couldn't do it over the phone because it was such pain. So he just did a second book. We're now doing his second book. And we're going to come back to the first book. Now, so we'll be talking about things, and I was trying to screw up things as usual. I was trying to get things said that shouldn't be said now because then you won't understand them later. But anyway, where am I at here? We're going to be talking about did I talk about his book already? I don't know if I did or not. Let me see. It's a 1-21. I think that's the one I'm looking for. I'm not sure. Yeah, no, it's 2-7. See, all right. So we'll play this. And this is what we'll upload. I thought I uploaded it, but I asked, so I didn't. Anyway. This is I don't know how short it is. I think it's about 20 minutes. You might not have any chance to play, but we'll play most of it. And we're going to come back in about 2 weeks, depending on how much snow we got here, because I want to go out and actually see Father. I haven't seen him in 2 years now because I couldn't get around because of my leg and because of the COVID. It's a disgrace. But anyway, I see him on TV. On Sunday when he's doing the services. Now, we are going to, I like to play this. Oh, I know what I didn't play. I didn't play this. I don't know if we'll get to it. I don't know if we will get to it. So what I'm going to have to do is close that out and see if I can get, I thought I got his, it's loading. I thought I had, but I didn't play anything. That's what I wanted to play. Rachel's comments. That's what I wanted to play. Rachel's comments. All right, so as soon as this is loaded in, we'll get on here and see if we get Rachel's comments. And because he did something about the these clowns down there in DeSantis, who is a complete moo-moo. You'll hear how he is. Is on the Omicron. Of course, I didn't load that one either. So hey, I didn't load it. You know why? Because those of you joining me now, I couldn't get to most of what we wanted to talk today because there was a virus on my computer. And Norton, which I have, didn't seem to be loading the information. And it said that I had a virus, and the virus had stopped me. And so I don't know. I'm looking now for my Norton. Yep, my Norton is still out. I don't know why. I have no idea. 360's out. But because it says device security, you're at risk. Okay, if it's now, if it's it now. So anyway, let's see. Fake Trump elect. They're reading all the names of the fake Trump electors now on TV, so you'll know who you are, and your neighbor will know who you are. Ooh, that's cute. That's cute. I can't get the information I wanted on here. I don't believe I can, but we'll just see if I can. There are people who call in. You now can call in. You have about 5 minutes before we're going to go to a tape interview. And maybe I can get this other one in. It could be very possible. I don't know. Let's see, Rachel's is about how long? Let's see, Rachel's speaking is about, I don't see it. Oh, I gotta press the button of the detail. It's about 35 minutes. Okay, so I think I have enough to play Rachel. So when I go back, and see if that one is ready. And if it is, we'll play her. Okay, come on. Come on, load. Unbelievable. Ah, there it is. Okay, now it just popped up. So, if it's loaded, that one I played already. Now I need to take this out. It says play all this, Rachel. And we're going to go right to Rachel, and she's talking about this clown that, no, it didn't come up yet. Yes, it did. Okay, just listen. This is funny. It's outrageous, but just let you have a great time listening to this. And I will speak to everybody because this is going to go off with them playing it, and I will speak to everybody next Friday. We're going to have a Father, we're going to have Father Sade's information on it, and probably his second book. So it might be a whole hour show. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, have a great weekend. This is The Last Words, Michael Lawson. Sign off.
But we start tonight in the summer of 2020, the first summer in which we were dealing with the ravages of the COVID epidemic. In a sort of press conference summit, the summer of 2020, a bunch of people got up on the steps of the United States Supreme Court and they gave a press conference. They wore white doctor's coats. The coats all had embroidered on them a little logo, America's Frontline Doctors. The point of that stunt that day was to tell the American people from this sort of official-looking group, or at least sort of medical-looking group, that actually COVID is no big deal. You definitely don't need to stay socially distanced from anybody else. Businesses don't need to close. Schools don't need to close. Nobody needs to make any accommodation in their lives for it. You definitely don't need to wear a mask. None of those things will keep you from getting COVID. Everybody is lying to you, and they tell you that those things will abate the risk of COVID. And besides, even if you do get COVID, it's no big deal because secretly, the government doesn't want you to know this, but there's a cure for COVID. Just take this anti-malaria drug, hydroxychloroquine, and maybe also some zinc, and that's the cure. The government doesn't want you to know there's a cure. The whole COVID thing is a hoax. Don't be a sheeple, people. It's all fine. That was a weird event in the summer of 2020. One of the America's Frontline Doctors speakers at that event is also known for her passionate claims that if you have ovarian cysts, that's because you've been having sex with demons in your sleep, which you really should stop doing. Because once you stop having sex with demons in your sleep, that will fix your ovaries right up. Also, generally, she says you should not trust Western medicine at all, because Western medicine is all based on DNA from space aliens. That said, white coat. And she says she's a frontline doctor, so she must know what she's talking about, ish. I mean, can you disprove the sex with demons thing? Can you? Congress has since opened an investigation into America's frontline doctors, not because of that Supreme Court stunt, that weird press conference, but because after that, they appear to have morphed into a hard sell online grifter outfit where they set up what appear to be bogus telemedicine appointments during which these doctors would market to you and then prescribe to you another fake COVID cure, the anti-parasite drug ivermectin, which appears to have no utility against COVID whatsoever. The group would take a hefty cut of the proceeds for their trouble. They appear to have made potentially millions of dollars in their hard sell on ivermectin telemedicine appointments. For all the COVID grifts and all the nonsense associated with this group, you might expect a congressional investigation, potentially a law enforcement investigation as well. You might not expect the leader of a state with one of the highest body counts from COVID to look to someone from that group to become the top health official in the state. You wouldn't expect that. But behold, Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida. That is exactly what he has done. A few months ago, Ron DeSantis chose this guy, a doctor named Joseph Latipo, seen here at the 2020 America's Frontline Doctors event outside the Supreme Court. Governor DeSantis chose him to be the new Surgeon General of Florida. Despite, like, this, Dr. Latipo apparently endeared himself to Ron DeSantis with appearances not only like that one, but also appearances in conservative media, also a series of op-eds, where he said that, you know, COVID isn't so bad and you definitely shouldn't, like, wear a mask to try to avoid getting it. Since becoming Surgeon General of Florida, Dr. Latipo has done press conferences with Governor DeSantis where he has ominously questioned the safety of the vaccines, essentially encouraging people that they shouldn't get them because they're so dangerous. He also earned himself a brief moment of notoriety in the press for refusing to personally himself wear a mask while he was in a meeting with a state senator who had just been diagnosed with cancer. She asked him to please put on a mask because of her serious medical condition. He refused. But one of the ways Dr. Latipo rose to prominence in conservative media circles and ultimately to this top medical post in Florida that Governor DeSantis put him in was in large part on the basis of him staking his credibility on being a frontline doctor. In his conservative media appearances, in his op-eds, he presented himself as a frontline doctor who spent time as a physician treating many, many, many COVID patients. And so his expertise in this matter was born out of, you know, the hard work that he had experienced with all his experience treating patients with COVID-19. Well, we reported exclusively here a couple of months ago on evidence that called those claims into question. Dr. Latipo wrote two op-eds in national newspapers in 2020 claiming that he had spent time taking care of COVID patients, specifically at UCLA's flagship hospital. This caught the attention of people who really did work at UCLA's hospital treating COVID patients. Multiple people who worked at UCLA's hospital at the same time as Dr. Latipo said that he was misleading the public about his experience treating COVID patients there. A member of the team treating COVID patients at UCLA told us that Dr. Latipo was not part of that team. We also obtained scheduling documents from the time Dr. Latipo was working at UCLA. Those documents did not show Dr. Latipo scheduled to take care of COVID patients at all. We contacted the Florida Department of Health seeking comment from Dr. Latipo multiple times when we first aired this reporting, but we never heard back. We reached out again this week, and the press secretary for the Florida Department of Health responded by calling our request for comment, quote, cute. That was an actual quote. Quote, thanks for reaching out to ask about this unsubstantiated conspiracy theory. It's cute that you're asking for comment. This is a state government. We then also heard from the communications director at the Florida Department of Health. He confirmed that Dr. Latipo did not treat COVID patients during much of 2020 when UCLA was running a COVID ward, but he claimed that Dr. Latipo must have treated patients prior to and also after that period. He told us, quote, I'm sure you can find documents that prove that. If you're finding other documents to promote your narrative, listen, we're not trying to find documents to promote a narrative. We're trying to figure out if the guy was telling the truth. And the thing is, we did try very hard to get hold of any documents that would prove that Dr. Latipo treated COVID patients at UCLA, particularly given the word from other doctors who actually did treat patients at UCLA that he was never among them and they never saw him. We have tried to find documents that would indicate that Dr. Latipo did treat COVID patients at UCLA. We cannot find any such documents. Dr. Latipo, neither Dr. Latipo nor the Florida Department of Health has provided any such documents in response to our requests. And in all the existing records that we can find indicate lots and lots of other doctors treating COVID patients at UCLA's hospital, but not him. One other thing to know about Dr. Latipo is that he has not actually yet been confirmed in this post as Florida's Surgeon General. Governor DeSantis put him up for the job months ago, and he's been essentially functioning as Florida's Surgeon General for the last several months, but he does ultimately have to be confirmed by the state Senate in Florida. Yesterday, he appeared before the Florida Senate for his confirmation hearing, and it was something.
much, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Dr. Lanapo, for being with us today. Do you believe vaccines work?
You're recognized for a series of answers. Thank you. Thank you, Senator. I consider vaccines in the same way that I consider other medical therapies. What we care about clinically is whether they are safe and effective. And that is the lens through which I evaluate all medical therapies.
Do you believe that vaccines in fighting against a pandemic like COVID-19 are effective?
You recognize. Thank you for your question, Senator. So, again, I would say that the question is a scientific one, and it's one that is answered with data. So the question is informed by data on, you know, on specific outcomes and specific therapies. So that's the scientific question.
Mr. Chair, just a couple more follow-ups.
Recognize.
Just a yes or no. Do vaccines work in fighting against COVID-19? Yes or no?
You recognize. Senator, as a scientist, you know, I am compelled to answer the scientific question. And I'd be happy to answer any specific scientific question that you have related to vaccines and COVID-19.
Scientifically, do the vaccines work against preventing COVID-19? Yes or no?
Recognize. Okay. Well, thank you again, Senator. So, you know, yes or no questions are not that that easy to find in science.
That's the Democratic leader of the Florida State Senate, Senator Lauren Book, struggling valiantly to try to get an answer out of Governor Ron DeSantis' handpicked Surgeon General for the state of Florida. Senator Book and her Democratic colleagues ultimately got up and walked out of that hearing, saying that they were fed up with Dr. Latipo's refusal to offer any answers to any questions. After that confirmation hearing, the Florida Sun Sentinel published this response from the paper's editorial board. Quote, Joseph Latipo and his contrived evasiveness must go. Quote, Dr. Joseph Latipo is an expert, all right. He's masterful at dodging questions, insulting the intelligence of Floridians, and avoiding straight talk about the need to be vaccinated against COVID-19. I'm married to data, Latipo told senators. The reality is that he's married to Governor DeSantis' agenda to politicize the pandemic. The doctor does not deserve to be confirmed as Surgeon General, especially now that he has shown that he has so little respect for the people of Florida that he wouldn't give them straight answers through their senators. I mean, there are a lot of debates around the COVID-19 pandemic and our response to it and effective policies and right. And some of those debates are absolutely worthwhile. It is, after all, a novel coronavirus. And so therefore, we learn more about it scientifically as we move on in time and we live with it for longer. Some of those debates are absolutely worthwhile, but some of them are ridiculous. And on the question of do the vaccines work, I don't know, seniors who are vaxxed are 50 times less likely to be hospitalized with COVID than seniors who aren't. 50 times? That's not statistically significant enough for you? I mean, not to be weird, but even Donald Trump says the vaccines work. The vaccines work. But the Surgeon General of Florida cannot bring himself to say that. That is apparently a bridge too far for that state's top doctor. Somebody should maybe check in with him about where he thinks ovarian cysts come from. But, you know, it's possible that all of this goes some way toward explaining the latest sort of COVID-related insanity coming from Florida's government. And the way that Republican politics go right now, things that originate in Florida's Republican government with Governor Ron DeSantis have a way of spreading around the world, spreading to other Republican states. And so it's worth noting this controversy over his top health official, it's also worth noting and watching out for other states to emulate Governor DeSantis on what happened there this week. This week, Governor DeSantis unleashed this furious tirade against the Biden administration, blasting President Biden and the administration for stopping shipments of two monoclonal antibody treatments for COVID. Governor DeSantis called that a sudden and reckless decision and accused the Biden administration of basically killing people, blocking life-saving treatments. He said he's going to fight back against this decision. What is so strange about this explosion of rage from Florida's governor, Ron DeSantis, is that the reason the federal government stopped sending those two particular monoclonal antibody treatments to Florida and all the other states in the country is that those two monoclonal antibodies do not work against the Omicron variant. Those two monoclonal antibodies have been a fantastic treatment for previous variants of COVID. They have saved lots and lots of lives, but they do not work against Omicron. Omicron is mutated in such a way that it is not susceptible to those treatments. The drug makers themselves say they have done the tests, and those monoclonal antibody treatments don't work against Omicron. And Omicron now makes up 99% of new cases of COVID across the country, including Florida. You do not have to be a chemist to understand this. I mean, again, this is a simple thing. Antibody drugs formulated with specificity to respond to this coronavirus, the newer mutation of the virus, the one that's 99% prevalent in the United States right now, that new mutation is not susceptible to these treatments from these two companies. It is not that hard to understand. If you are 4 years old and listening to me right now, you probably understand what I just said. There is one monoclonal antibody from GlaxoSmithKline that does still work against Omicron. That drug is unfortunately in very short supply right now, and they're struggling to make more of it as fast as they can. But from those other two companies, from Regeneron and Eli Lilly, their antibody treatments, while they worked on earlier iterations of the coronavirus, they do not work on the current one. Again, this is easy. This is not even like math. This is like counting on your fingers territory. But in Florida, they apparently cannot get that. Even before today, all this month, Governor Ron DeSantis has been on this kick about how many antibody treatment centers he's opened and how many doses of Regeneron, the one that doesn't work against Omicron, how many doses of Regeneron he has managed to secure for Floridians, and how the Biden administration hasn't been sending enough and he's demanding more. He has been doing this even though it has been clear for weeks now that these treatments don't work against the Omicron variant, and the Omicron variant has taken over. A week ago, the Daily Beast summed it up with this accurate headline: Ron DeSantis opens antibody centers that are useless against Omicron. And Governor DeSantis' Surgeon General, Joseph Latipo, has chimed in too, saying we should not just listen to people labeled as experts on these matters. He says he will personally continue using those antibody treatments on patients with Omicron, even though they are proven not to work against Omicron. Because, you know, it works so well with hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin, and I don't know what the antidote is to sex with demons, but I'm sure we've nipped that in the bud now. It is such a weird fight to pick right now in Florida. Under the leadership of Ron DeSantis and Joe Latipo, Florida is insisting that as a state government, they're going to do nothing to mitigate the spread of COVID whatsoever. And worse than that, they will continue to spread doubt and misinformation about both vaccines and masks. But they also insist they must be allowed to continue to give people monoclonal antibodies that literally do not work against the Omicron variant, which is COVID now. We are 2 years into this pandemic. This is what passes for pandemic policy in our third most populous state. And as I said, Republican politics are in such a state right now that what happens in Florida tends to spread to other red states as soon as it gets featured on Fox News or whatever. Dr. Latipo's confirmation process to become officially the Surgeon General of Florida, it is still not complete in Florida. He's due before the Ethics Committee in the state legislature there as early as next week. Perhaps at that next round of confirmation hearings, somebody will ask him about his nonsensical claims about monoclonal antibodies. Perhaps somebody will ask him about his claims of treating COVID patients when it appears he had not. Maybe that will pop the bubble here. Don't hold your breath. the first summer in which we were dealing with the ravages of the COVID epidemic. In a sort of press conference stunt, the summer of 2020, a bunch of people got up on the steps of the United States Supreme Court and they gave a press conference. They wore white doctor's coats. The coats all had embroidered on them a little logo, America's Frontline Doctors. The point of that stunt that day was to tell the American people from this sort of official-looking group, or at least sort of medical-looking group, that actually COVID is no big deal. You definitely don't need to stay socially distanced from anybody else. Businesses don't need to close. Schools don't need to close. Nobody needs to make any accommodation in their lives for it. You definitely don't need to wear a mask. None of those things will keep you from getting COVID. Everybody is lying to you, and they tell you that those things will abate the risk of COVID. And besides, even if you do get COVID, it's no big deal because secretly, the government doesn't want you to know this, but there's a cure for COVID. Just take this anti-malaria drug, hydroxychloroquine, and maybe also some zinc, and that's the cure. The government doesn't want you to know there's a cure. The whole COVID thing is a hoax. Don't be a sheeple, people. It's all fine. That was a weird event in the summer of 2020. One of the America's Frontline Doctors speakers at that event is also known for her passionate claims that if you have ovarian cysts, that's because you've been having sex with demons in your sleep, which you really should stop doing. Because once you stop having sex with demons in your sleep, that will fix your ovaries right up. Also, generally, she says you should not trust Western medicine at all, because Western medicine is all based on DNA from space aliens. That said, white coat. And she says she's a frontline doctor, so she must know what she's talking about, ish. I mean, can you disprove the sex with demons thing? Can you? Congress has since opened an investigation into America's frontline doctors, not because of that Supreme Court stunt, that weird press conference, but because after that, they appear to have morphed into a hard sell online grifter outfit where they set up what appear to be bogus telemedicine appointments during which these doctors would market to you and then prescribe to you another fake COVID cure, the anti-parasite drug ivermectin, which appears to have no utility against COVID whatsoever. The group would take a hefty cut of the proceeds for their trouble. They appear to have made potentially millions of dollars in their hard sell on ivermectin telemedicine appointments. For all the COVID grifts and all the nonsense associated with this group, you might expect a congressional investigation, potentially a law enforcement investigation as well. You might not expect the leader of a state with one of the highest body counts from COVID to look to someone from that group to become the top health official in the state. You wouldn't expect that. But behold, Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida, that is exactly what he has done. A few months ago, Ron DeSantis chose this guy, a doctor named Joseph Latipo, seen here at the 2020 America's Frontline Doctors event outside the Supreme Court. Governor DeSantis chose him to be the new Surgeon General of Florida. Despite like this, Dr. Latipo apparently endeared himself to Ron DeSantis with appearances not only like that one, but also appearances in conservative media, also a series of op-eds, where he said that, you know, COVID isn't so bad and you definitely shouldn't, like, wear a mask to try to avoid getting it. Since becoming Surgeon General of Florida, Dr. Latipo has done press conferences with Governor DeSantis where he has ominously questioned the safety of the vaccines, essentially encouraging people that they shouldn't get them because they're so dangerous. He also earned himself a brief moment of notoriety in the press for refusing to personally himself wear a mask while he was in a meeting with a state senator who had just been diagnosed with cancer. She asked him to please put on a mask because of her serious medical condition. He refused. But one of the ways Dr. Latipo rose to prominence in conservative media circles and ultimately to this top medical post in Florida that Governor DeSantis put him in was in large part on the basis of him staking his credibility on being a frontline doctor. In his conservative media appearances, in his op-eds, he presented himself as a frontline doctor who spent time as a physician treating many, many, many COVID patients. And so his expertise in this matter was born out of, you know, the hard work that he had experienced with all his experience treating patients with COVID-19. Well, we reported exclusively here a couple of months ago on evidence that called those claims into question. Dr. Latipo wrote two op-eds in national newspapers in 2020 claiming that he had spent time taking care of COVID patients, specifically at UCLA's flagship hospital. This caught the attention of people who really did work at UCLA's hospital treating COVID patients. Multiple people who worked at UCLA's hospital at the same time as Dr. Latipo said that he was misleading the public about his experience treating COVID patients there. A member of the team treating COVID patients at UCLA told us that Dr. Latipo was not part of that team. We also obtained scheduling documents from the time Dr. Latipo was working at UCLA. Those documents did not show Dr. Latipo scheduled to take care of COVID patients at all. We contacted the Florida Department of Health seeking comment from Dr. Latipo multiple times when we first aired this reporting, but we never heard back. We reached out again this week, and the press secretary for the Florida Department of Health responded by calling our request for comment, quote, cute. That was an actual quote. Quote, thanks for reaching out to ask about this unsubstantiated conspiracy theory. It's cute that you're asking for comment.
I don't know, maybe if you listen
this is a state government. We then also heard from the communications director at the Florida Department of Health. He confirmed that Dr. Latipo did not treat COVID patients during much of 2020 when UCLA was running a COVID ward, but he claimed that Dr. Latipo must have treated patients prior to and also after that period. He told us, quote, I'm sure you can find documents that prove that. If you're finding other documents to promote your narrative, listen, we're not trying to find documents to promote a narrative. We're trying to figure out if the guy was telling the truth. And the thing is, we did try very hard to get hold of any documents that would prove that Dr. Latipo treated COVID patients at UCLA, particularly given the word from other doctors who actually did treat patients at UCLA that he was never among them and they never saw him. We have tried to find documents that would indicate that Dr. Latipo did treat COVID patients at UCLA. We cannot find any such documents. Dr. Latipo nor the, neither Dr. Latipo nor the Florida Department of Health has provided any such documents in response to our requests. And in all the existing records that we can find indicate lots and lots of other doctors treating COVID patients at UCLA's hospital, but not him. One other thing to know about Dr. Latipo is that he has not actually yet been confirmed in this post as Florida's Surgeon General. Governor DeSantis put him up for the job months ago, and he's been essentially functioning as Florida's Surgeon General for the last several months, but he does ultimately have to be confirmed by the state Senate in Florida. Yesterday, he appeared before the Florida Senate for his confirmation hearing, and it was something.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Dr. Latipo, for being with us today. Do you believe vaccines work?
You're recognized for a series of answers. Thank you. Thank you, Senator. I consider vaccines in the same way that I consider other medical therapies. What we care about clinically is whether they are safe and effective, and that is the lens through which I evaluate all medical therapies.
Do you believe that vaccines in fighting against a pandemic like COVID-19 are effective?
You recognize. Thank you for your question, Senator. So, again, I would say that the question is a scientific one, and it's one that is answered with data. The question is informed by data on, you know, on specific outcomes and specific therapies. So that's the scientific question.
Mr. Chair, just a couple more follow-ups.
Recognize.
Just a yes or no. Do vaccines work in fighting against COVID-19? Yes or no?
You recognize. Senator, as a scientist, you know, I am compelled to answer the scientific question, and I'd be happy to answer
any specific scientific question that you have related to vaccines and COVID-19.
Scientifically, do the vaccines work against preventing COVID-19? Yes or no?
Recognize.
Okay. Well, thank you again, Senator. So, yes or no questions are not that that easy to find in science.
That's the Democratic leader of the Florida State Senate, Senator Lauren Book, struggling valiantly to try to get an answer out of Governor Ron DeSantis' handpicked Surgeon General for the state of Florida. Senator Book and her Democratic colleagues ultimately got up and walked out of that hearing, saying that they were fed up with Dr. Latipo's refusal to offer any answers to any questions. After that confirmation hearing, the Florida Sun Sentinel published this response from the paper's editorial board. Quote, Joseph Latipo and his contrived evasiveness must go. Quote, Dr. Joseph Latipo is an expert, all right. He's masterful at dodging questions, insulting the intelligence of Floridians, and avoiding straight talk about the need to be vaccinated against COVID-19. I'm married to data, Latipo told senators. The reality is that he's married to Governor DeSantis' agenda to politicize the pandemic. The doctor does not deserve to be confirmed as Surgeon General, especially now that he has shown that he has so little respect for the people of Florida that he wouldn't give them straight answers through their senators. I mean, there are a lot of debates around the COVID-19 pandemic and our response to it and effective policies and right. And some of those debates are absolutely worthwhile. It is, after all, a novel coronavirus. And so therefore, we learn more about it scientifically as we move on in time and we live with it for longer. Some of those debates are absolutely worthwhile, but some of them are ridiculous. And on the question of do the vaccines work, I don't know, seniors who are vaxxed are 50 times less likely to be hospitalized with COVID than seniors who aren't? 50 times? That's not statistically significant enough for you? I mean, not to be weird, but even Donald Trump says the vaccines work. The vaccines work. But the Surgeon General of Florida cannot bring himself to say that. That is apparently a bridge too far for that state's top doctor. Somebody should maybe check in with him about where he thinks ovarian cysts come from. But, you know, it's possible that all of this goes some way toward explaining the latest sort of COVID-related insanity coming from Florida's government. And the way that Republican politics go right now, things that originate in Florida's Republican government with Governor Ron DeSantis have a way of spreading around the world, spreading to other Republican states. And so it's worth noting this controversy over his top health official. It's also worth noting and watching out for other states to emulate Governor DeSantis on what happened there this week. This week, Governor DeSantis unleashed this furious tirade against the Biden administration, blasting President Biden and the administration for stopping shipments of two monoclonal antibody treatments for COVID. Governor DeSantis called that a sudden and reckless decision and accused the Biden administration of basically killing people, blocking life-saving treatments. He said he's going to fight back against this decision. What is so strange about this explosion of rage from Florida's governor, Ron DeSantis, is that the reason the federal government stopped sending those two particular monoclonal antibody treatments to Florida and all the other states in the country is that those two monoclonal antibodies do not work against the Omicron variant. Those two monoclonal antibodies have been a fantastic treatment for previous variants of COVID. They have saved lots and lots of lives, but they do not work against Omicron. Omicron is mutated in such a way that it is not susceptible to those treatments. The drug makers themselves say they have done the tests, and those monoclonal antibody treatments don't work against Omicron. And Omicron now makes up 99% of new cases of COVID across the country, including Florida. You do not have to be a chemist to understand this. I mean, again, this is a simple thing. Antibody drugs formulated with specificity to respond to this coronavirus, the newer mutation of the virus, the one that's 99% prevalent in the United States right now, that new mutation is not susceptible to these treatments from these two companies. It is not that hard to understand. If you are 4 years old and listening to me right now, you probably understand what I just said. There is one monoclonal antibody from GlaxoSmithKline that does still work against Omicron. That drug is unfortunately in very short supply right now, and they're struggling to make more of it as fast as they can. But from those other two companies, from Regeneron and Eli Lilly, their antibody treatments, while they worked on earlier iterations of the coronavirus, they do not work on the current one. Again, this is easy. This is not even like math. This is like counting on your fingers territory. But in Florida, they apparently cannot get that. Even before today, all this month, Governor Ron DeSantis has been on this kick about how many antibody treatment centers he's opened and how many doses of Regeneron, the one that doesn't work against Omicron, how many doses of Regeneron he has managed to secure for Floridians, and how the Biden administration hasn't been sending enough and he's demanding more. He has been doing this even though it has been clear for weeks now that these treatments don't work against the Omicron variant, and the Omicron variant has taken over. A week ago, the Daily Beast summed it up with this accurate headline: Ron DeSantis opens antibody centers that are useless against Omicron. And Governor DeSantis' Surgeon General, Joseph Latipo, has chimed in too, saying we should not just listen to people labeled as experts on these matters. He says he will personally continue using those antibody treatments on patients with Omicron, even though they are proven not to work against Omicron. Because, you know, it works so well with hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin, and I don't know what the antidote is to sex with demons, but I'm sure we've nipped that in the bud now. It is such a weird fight to pick right now in Florida. Under the leadership of Ron DeSantis and Joe Latipo, Florida is insisting that as a state government, they're going to do nothing to mitigate the spread of COVID whatsoever. And worse than that, they will continue to spread doubt and misinformation about both vaccines and masks. But they also insist they must be allowed to continue to give people monoclonal antibodies that literally do not work against the Omicron variant, which is COVID now. We are 2 years into this pandemic. This is what passes for pandemic policy in our third most populous state. And as I said, Republican politics are in such a state right now that what happens in Florida tends to spread to other red states as soon as it gets featured on Fox News or whatever. Dr. Latipo's confirmation process to become officially the Surgeon General of Florida, it is still not complete in Florida. He's due before the Ethics Committee in the state legislature there as early as next week. Perhaps at that next round of confirmation hearings, somebody will ask him about his nonsensical claims about monoclonal antibodies. Perhaps somebody will ask him about his claims of treating COVID patients when it appears he had not. Maybe that will pop the bubble here. Don't hold your breath.